Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Red Sox win it! Christian Vasquez!
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Mason Crosby got it done! Fourth time a charm!
Emmanuel Sanders, touchdown Bills. That should just about do it.
The Rich Eisen Show.
I didn't see this coming. Not tonight. We didn't handle ourselves the right way.
Still to come, the Ringer NFL writer, Kevin Clark. Chargers running back, Austin Eckler. Plus, your phone calls, complete NFL Sunday recap, and more. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. Spoke at length in hour number one about how I needed to see what the Bills could do to the Chiefs. I needed to see it before I could believe it. I'm now a believer. I saw it last night. They are the best team in the AFC. I know the Chargers might go point for point with them. I don't know if they'll be able to stop the offense that the Bills just threw on the Chiefs, but their defense has got to be better than the Kansas City Chiefs defense. Pretty much any defense is better than the Kansas City Chiefs defense. I know Seattle's been somewhat porous and has given up more yards in their games, but in terms of yards per play, I mentioned this earlier on, I still can't believe it. The Chiefs defense gives up 7.1 yards per play. You can't even say that's unsustainable. That saying, just merely calling it unsustainable, is unsustainable in and of itself. And then you toss in 11 turnovers, tied with the Jaguars for the most in the NFL through 5 weeks. It's remarkable they're 2-3. And not 1-4 or even worse. Chiefs are in trouble. Bills look good. Cowboys put the bang thing on again. We talked about how the Steelers were as impressive as they've looked offensively all season long, and now Juju Smith-Schuster's out for the year. He had surgery on the shoulder that knocked him out of yesterday's win for the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Arizona Cardinals, still the only undefeated team in the NFL, and you could make a case that that was their most impressive win yet because Kyler Murray wasn't going off. Not going off at all, And Trey Lance was getting his yards, man. He was getting his yards, and somehow, some way, presto, the Arizona Cardinals won that game against the San Francisco 49ers at home. The first NFC West team in four chances to win a home game against a division opponent. The road teams, including the Thursday night kickoff of week five in the NFC West, all 3-0. Niners almost made it 4-0. We'll keep an eye on all that with Trey Lance as they go through their bye week. This is upcoming week in the NFL. Is the first bye week for many. And our bracketology that we've thrown up on our Twitter feed at Rich Eisen Show, Chris Brockman has put up all four brackets because we decided that we would talk about the craziness of this weekend, the October madness through brackets. Put it up one more time, Hoskins. The 1-8 game, if you will, is the Rays ground rule double in the 13th versus Yasmani Grandal deflecting a ball with his shoulder, and that was allowed to stand. That's your 1-8 game. Your 3-6 game is the Bengals missing a field goal in overtime, but it still hit the flag for the win. The Sooners walk-off touchdown run is the 3-6 game. The 4-5 game is A&M beating Alabama with no time left and the Lions losing on a last-second field goal again. The Browns dragging Austin Eckler in the end zone for the final touchdown of a 41-point fourth quarter. A team who wins that offensive contest not wanting to score but scoring, and the defense allowing them to by dragging him in the end zone because they wanted the ball back. And then there's rounds 3 and 4 of the Fury Wilder championship bout that was taken by Tyson Fury. And to talk about that and all the football that went down this weekend is none other than Kevin Clark of The Ringer back here on The Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Kevin?
I'm doing great. A lot of sports to take in, Rich.
No question. That's why we put it in a bracket, you know? That's why we had to put it in a bracket.
It's the only way.
So,
more than four things, you got to throw it in a bracket.
I will give you the floor on the Tyson Fury-Deontay Wilder fight that went down on Saturday night. What were your thoughts taking that one in, Kevin?
Well, I thought it was going to go – actually, I might have been the only person who thought it was going to go that way. Deontay Wilder became vastly underrated in the past 19 months, Rich. I mean, it's a little bit like a football team where we see them lose one game and we just sort of get off the bandwagon. Wilder still was the hardest puncher in the sport. Tyson Fury was talking about that going into the third fight last week. He was saying, guys, Deontay Wilder still has the hardest right hand in boxing. And so this was always on the table that he was going to change his game plan a little bit. He was more aggressive. He only landed 9 jabs, but he threw them. He changed his game plan a little bit. That's what he had to do. So Fury's the better boxer. If they fought 100 times, Fury would win the vast majority of them. But I was not surprised there were some knockdowns, because when Deontay Wilder gets in the ring with a guy, he knocks him down. That's how it normally happens. And now Wilder knocked him down in 2 of the 3 fights they've had. They're not going to have another fight, I assume. But we saw boxing at its best, basically. And we saw what, over the 3 fights these guys have had, we saw how boxers can change, the world can change, the sport can change. I loved it.
And, I mean, when Wilder knocked down Fury.
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't, I still can't get enough of the constant that it appears to be with these fights is the amount of seconds that Fury gets to get off the canvas. It happened again, do you think, with these two fighters? What do you think? That he got too much time to get up? What do you think there?
Listen, there's so many – in heavyweight boxing, in high-level heavyweight boxing, Rich, there are so many questions going back to 1920s about long counts, right? And I think the guys get – you saw that Anthony Joshua lost to Andy Ruiz in their first fight 3 Junes ago. People were saying Joshua was getting, 17 seconds in some cases to actually re-engage. Because he kept getting knocked down. He was the heavyweight champion in the world. So it's a gray area. I mean, I think there's still people who argue, Rich, in the first fight, that with the fact that Tyson Fury, basically his eyes were closed, that should have been waved off and was a knockout. People have argued that. Deontay Wilder has argued that. Jack Reese, the referee, said it was the best call in his career to let that go. So it's always a bit of a gray area. I thought it was a long count, but that's just high-level heavyweight boxing. But rules are meant to be bent in heavyweight high-level boxing.
Afterwards, Fury said that he told Wilder, essentially, good fight, and Wilder said, I'm not going to do anything, respectful or...
No sportsmanship is what he said.
Right.
No sportsmanship.
What's up with that?
It's a good lesson. Listen, so I was at the second fight. I was at the first fight, too, but I was at the second fight where Wilder lost. And I went over to the tunnel to watch him walk back in, and he looked as defeated as any athlete I've ever seen in my life. And I've been in post-Super Bowl locker rooms after a team lost. I've been in some pretty heavy-duty places as far as emotions go, and I've never seen somebody as upset as Wilder. I think that Wilder's ego was tied into the fact that he had knocked 40 guys out, and anybody he'd ever been in the ring with, he had knocked out. Even if he didn't knock them out the first time, he would fight them again and knock them out then. I've spent some time with Deontay Wilder. He's this swaggering personality, and I kind of think at age 35, he's not ready to consider himself anything other than that guy, than the guy who knocks people out whenever he gets in a ring with them. And I think he's having a tough time adjusting to this reality, and that is why I think you've seen him act a little pouty. Not a little pouty, a lot pouty, mm-hmm. in the two losses he's had.
So where does Fury now stand in terms of all time? One of the greatest?
I don't know. I mean, Usyk, who beat Anthony Joshua a couple weeks ago, now has the heavyweight championships. That fight's still out there. I mean, Fury, everybody's been talking about what happens with when Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury get in the same ring. They're both English. They're both hugely famous. You can sell out, 90,000-seat stadium over there. It's going to be a rout. I mean, it is going to be a rout. Tyson Fury would destroy Anthony Joshua right now if they fought, unless Joshua makes huge changes to his game, which I don't see coming. He's up there with the all-time greats. He's going to dominate this era of heavyweight. He's talked about wanting to retire after a couple more fights. He's only 33. I don't see it, but I also see that I see maybe only 2 heavyweights capable of even giving him an interesting fight. So there's not a lot for him out there. He's really, really good. He beat Klitschko. He beat Wilder. He's going to beat Joshua. He'll beat Usyk. Yeah, he's dominating in this era.
Well, what about the fact that nobody thought that another heavyweight era was going to matter? Right? I mean, let's be honest. because this we're now in the era of UFC. We're now in the era of there's 50 million ways to take things in. I'm holding up my phone right here, you know, and there's so many different ways for us to not pay attention to something that we even get a sniff of the fact that is irrelevant. And then his own personal journey. I mean, I retweeted a video of his honest soliloquy when he was here 2 years ago about wanting to kill himself. And how he still battles mental health, and how he is in this 21st century, you know, a guy who looks like he's straight out of a Guy Ritchie movie, who's going to be, you know, Lock, Stock, and Two Vinnie Jones, you know, that he comes across and he talks about mental health and he sings to fans after he wins, he serenades them. I mean, talk about it, shot in the arm, and what he means to the sport. It really is incredible. He's one of the all-time greats. You got to give it up. You know,
boxing is always going to be personality driven. And it was funny because, or not funny, but what my wife and I went to the first fight as a fan, quite frankly. It was in LA and I just bought a ticket. And to illustrate kind of the journey, I showed her the video when Tyson was in your studio. Mm-hmm. And she was all in after that because she understood the journey. And that's what boxing is about. On the other side, Wilder was going through all this because he wanted to support his daughter. He was a beer delivery guy, and he went into a boxing gym and thought he could fight, and he could. And I think that at its best, boxing has the best stories because it's just so real and raw, and there's no hiding. And that's, I think, part of the reason Wilder can't take losing is there's just no hiding from it. You can't blame it on a coach. You can't blame it on an offensive line. It's you and the other guy. And I think that the heavyweight division can matter if there's two, three good fights that everybody gets into. I think that it was really hard. I mean, listen, I was at the first fight just as a supporter of boxing in L.A., and it was not sold out between Wilder and Fury. I don't think a lot of people cared. Then they had that epic match. It built on itself. I went to the second one as a journalist. DiCaprio was there. Mahomes was there. Khalil Mack was there. It became a huge, huge thing. I did not see Mahomes and DiCaprio at the first one at the Staples Center, okay? But boxing has a way of building on itself, and that's what you have to give these two guys credit for, is they entertained us so much they got us talking about heavyweight boxing again. When, frankly, I'm with you. I thought boxing was going to be more middleweights, more featherweights, more welterweights. Heavyweight boxing for right now is back.
Brockman and TJ were at that first fight. I don't know if you were not close to.
We ran into Kevin in the lobby. But yeah.
Mr. and Mrs. Clark, you ran into them there in the rotunda.
Famously, Brockman said he wanted to bet on a draw and didn't do it.
Yep.
That is.
I think I might have talked him out of it.
That is, by the way, that is so on brand. I can't tell you how on brand that is. Yep. That's amazing. Kevin Clark of The Ringer here on the Rich Eisen Show. So did you get any sense when you spoke to Mahomes and were around the Chiefs at all this summer that there was a hangover coming potentially? Because that's what this one looks like to me, man. I mean, a team that's been to the Super Bowl twice and has had, you know, and then lost and it's, you know, playing long seasons 2 years in a row and Tyreek Hill dropping balls and the injuries hitting and then the turnovers come. That reeks of Super Bowl hangover. What was your general sense of things that could have maybe even given a window into the 2-3 Chiefs start we're now seeing, Kevin?
I thought they were trying to avoid a hangover by being proactive. It was really interesting because when I spent time with Mahomes in August, it wasn't that much time, but you know, he had said he watched the Super Bowl basically to learn what he did wrong, even though I think the entire world, including us, thinks he did almost nothing wrong in that game. He just got battered by a bad offensive line and an incredibly fast defense in Tampa Bay. But he was watching it to sort of learn. Okay, he thought he was bailing from a clean pocket too often. He made some mistakes. He thought once he got hit, he started going through his reads less and less and not making the right play. Right now with the Chiefs, this is a defensive problem. Josh Allen last night on passes over 20 yards was 5 of 6 for 213 yards, no interceptions, perfect passer rating. This is a disaster right now for the Kansas City Chiefs and their defense. I don't know how you fix it. There's no, you know, people were asking me last night on Twitter, is there a move they can make? Well, you know, shut down corners or top safeties, or, you know, somebody to replace Daniel Sorensen. Those guys are not exactly on the open market in October, so it's going to be tough for them. But this was bad. I mean, Chris Jones, and you know, we talk about it all the time. Daniel Jeremiah calls it Jenga pieces, where you remove a guy and you find out very quickly how important he is. Chris Jones is obviously, we knew he was great, but to see the lack of pass rush last night when Chris Jones was out was actually quite startling. And then beyond that, they just couldn't get anything going. This was bad, and I don't know how you fix it in the sense that I don't know how you get back to being one of the AFC's top teams when this conference is really, really good. The Bills are great. The Chargers look awesome. The Bills, by the way, I mean, they game planned. They changed their whole personnel for this. I was with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott in August as well, and Bean told me that one of the reasons they took two pass rushers with their first two picks in the draft was because they watched the tape of Kansas City and they wanted to gear themselves towards that AFC championship game and where they came up short and try to get over that hump. They put a target on the Chiefs, and the fact that they won this game in such a resounding fashion has to be a massive, massive emotional lift. I know everybody says, oh, you want to win every game, whatever. I'm like, they really, the amount of time in Buffalo I heard people talk about the Chiefs told me that they built their season around this kind of thing.
Well, I mean, it's remarkable, Kevin, that the Bills have achieved a certain level of just needing to fine-tune their roster in the offseason with a specific target in mind, the only one that could prevent them from getting to where they want to go. It's interesting you mentioned the Chargers, because defensively I'm concerned about them as well, you know, and the Browns just put 42 on them, yeah. You know, the Derek Carr put a third quarter on them on the Monday nighter that almost cost them the game.
Yep.
They do have a tremendous quarterback. Who do you think could be the team that, what about the Ravens who we see tonight? I mean, what team do you think would prevent the Bills? Because it sure is not coming from within the house in the AFC East, that's for sure.
You know? Yeah, I'm ready to rule out the AFC East outside of Buffalo. But, no, it's funny. It would be a kind of a great irony if the Bills spent all of this time trying to beat the Chiefs in the playoffs and they don't even face them in the playoffs, right? So I think that's the tier right now. I'd go Bills number one. I would say the Chargers right behind that right now. Maybe that's recency bias. They probably should have lost yesterday, but they won. And I think that, you know, I saw that stat. I don't know if you saw it. The Browns are the first team in history to score 40 points, not turn the ball over, and lose. Before this, teams were 463-0 in those situations. Mm. Okay, the Browns played a perfect game. They just made a couple mistakes. Baker ran a really bad 2 minutes. There was a very, very, very fishy defensive pass interference call at one point. But winning games you should lose is a hallmark of a good team and a special team. I love Brandon Staley. I love Justin Herbert. I love that roster. I think the defense has problems, but so does almost every defense in the NFL right now. So I put the Chargers right beyond that, and then I would put the Ravens on that tier too. I really want to see what they look like tonight, but I'm extremely willing to be talked into the Ravens as an AFC contender. But right now it's Buffalo and everybody else.
So then break down the NFC for me in your estimation, because that NFC's already put to bed 5 weeks in. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that it's interesting, because I think that what we saw from the Bucs last year tells me that I want to hold off on any judgments on them. And it's interesting because there's just a threshold with the cornerbacks where it becomes too much to win a Super Bowl if you don't have them. But I don't know what that is. It's almost like what we saw with the Chiefs in the offensive line play last year, right? Where it was, we didn't understand how bad it was going to be until we saw it in the field one day and said, oh, wow, they don't have an offensive line to protect Patrick Mahomes anymore, and it's the biggest game of the year. And so I'm waiting to see on the health of their defense. I don't think Richard Sherman is going to be a high-level guy if they have to actually depend on him to make huge plays. If he's just a depth guy and yet you put him in certain spots, I'm fine with that. That's a low-risk maneuver. But if he's what you're depending on, that's a different equation. For me right now, it's the Cowboys, and this is a tier, so I'm not ranking these teams, but I'm saying Cowboys, Cardinals, Rams, Packers, Bucks. And I, depending on the day, I move that around. But, you know, on our podcast, I'll send it to Ringer NFL Show, I wouldn't be surprised if the Cowboys won the NFC.
You know what? You said that to us in the summer, and I saw you retweeted my soliloquy from a couple weeks ago saying it's time for me to give the Cowboys what they, you know, I'm not one of those members of the media that won't give them their due when they deserve it. And you said, hey, I told you they were your they were a surprise team in the summer. I saw that tweet, Kevin.
Hey,
I saw
it. I'm just reminding the people. What's funny about it, Rich, is that I talked them up on radio shows, on my podcast, on video, whatever. Talked them up for 8 months. And then the week it came time to actually have NFL predictions on our site was the week that Dak was out and the Jerry Jones was calling the Texas Rangers about Dak's shoulder. And I was like, this all seems a little weird. So I didn't even pick them to win the division. I had spent 8 months talking about this. And then like the next week I was like, oh no, they look amazing. They might go to the Super Bowl. So I talked myself out of my own pick that I had spent 8 months trying to convince other people of.
Oh, Kevin. Come on. I feel for you, brother, because I thought Washington football team's going to do it too. The Eagles just had a nice win, but the Cowboys are clearly the class of the NFC. Thanks for the call, Kevin. I'm glad. Always love picking your brain, and certainly I know you're a boxing guy too, to have you on a special day like today after Fury and Wilder. And then on top of it, you know, I saw your Twitter feed earlier this morning. I'm at least saving you from this concept of your tweet. What's the best college football scheme podcast? And
I'm trying to learn, Rich.
Kevin, you need a hobby. Break out of it. I say this on behalf of your wife, who I've never met. Come on.
She's lovely. What's that? I will say that it's because University of Miami is probably going to fire their coach at some point this year, hopefully, and I just want to get an understanding of what's going on at that level. So there's a reason for it, but on the other hand, it's a deeply pathetic tweet. I'm sorry, Rich.
No, I just want to I'm trying to help you. You know what I mean? I'm trying to help you. You know, just watch Ted Lasso if you already haven't. I'm sure. Take care of yourself, Kevin. Okay.
Thanks, bud.
All right. That's Kevin Clark, everybody from The Ringer. @ Kevin Clark. What's the best college football scheme podcast?
I mean,
good.
That is so deep.
Oh, my gosh. It's not even playable. That's how deep it is. Not playing.
I mean, I like sports. I don't think I like sports that much.
He's got a wife. He's got a life.
He has a wife. He just moved. He moved back to the East Coast.
Okay, very good. I mean, he's got a life. Very good. So how about this? Let's just linger on this for a second. Where do you want to be in the NFL? Here's where you want to be. You want to be taken care of at quarterback, right? You want to check that box, right? Where you know you got the right one. We're all just, let's exhale. We are not evaluating another quarterback for a very long time. We are off that train of trying to get that quarterback, trying to fill in that blank of the sentence that hangs over so many franchises. Who's going to be the next fill in the blank, right? Trying to get that quarterback. You want to check that box. You want to check the box, the coach. You want to check the box of the general manager. You want to check that box. You want to check the box of ownership, but we all know fans have no control over that sort of thing, right? You want to check those boxes, and then you want your defense and the rest of your team to be good enough where you've got a shot to win it all. You want to check that box. And then you want to check the box. This is such a rare box to check. We're so set in our roster. We're just going to fine-tune to beat that one team that's right in front of us. Because we're late to the party in terms of timing's everything. You know, this team's already arrived where we want to go. But we know which team it is, and we are going to draft. We are going to massage the roster to beat that one team. That's where you want to be. I would love my Jets to be anywhere. We're kind of wondering, did we check the box, the quarterback? That's how far away they are. Even though it's three games in the standings, it is light years between the Jets and the Bills. The Buffalo Bills, the big punchline Buffalo Bills team franchise, big punchline for a quarter century, even including their dynastic championship teams. That's really the punchline. Okay. Yeah. Dynasty. A dynasty, all those years that they lost the Super Bowl 4 in a row. Punchline, Western New York, Buffalo Bills, their fans. Guess what? You want to be where the Bills are. Most likely. Cowboys, you've checked the box on your quarterback. You checking the box on your coach? Got the right one? Okay. Okay. Are you checking the box on the general manager and the grocery shopper?
I will argue.
You're checking
that point.
The box
yes,
now.
Yes.
Okay, check the box.
I will argue
all right,
that point.
All right.
We got, first of all, we got Diggs.
You've got your own digs.
Yeah,
Buffalo's
mean,
got a digs. You got your digs.
Yeah.
Okay. So
we draft very
honestly,
well.
You're checking the boxes on the Bucks, who know that they've got to go shopping for the quarterback at some point again, but they don't care. I don't blame them.
Yeah.
So many. Not everybody's checked these boxes. I think the Rams have checked that box. The Rams have checked the box. They've checked the box with that quarterback now. They erased the last one, and they checked it with a new one. You know, coach, GM, you got that. You got the roster that you like.
Stadium.
Bills are essentially no longer that punchline. They are who you want to be. And winning last night, you just heard Kevin Clark say that they – were fine-tuning their roster to go hunt the Chiefs, and they hunted. Boy, did they bag that big game last night. Ooh, and they are taking them back to Buffalo, and they are mounting that on the wall. Let's take a break. Overreaction Monday. More of your phone calls also still to come this hour. Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence not on the same page.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, we just showed you on our Peacock feed, we just showed you Tyson Fury from June of 2019, the one time he was here in studio talking about his battle with mental health and also getting up off the mat against Wilder. Said that he was out for 4 seconds, realized he had to get up, and he got up right away. I said, what do you say to people who said you were out for another 7 seconds? I hid underneath the desk just watching that.
I know. And TJ and I were there. We were on the floor. We were like 10 rows back.
Man.
It was one of the craziest, craziest scenes I've ever been to in my history of going to sporting events.
Yeah, I thought the fight was over.
I'll tell you, electric. I would love for everybody to just go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show, to see that entire Fury interview, or go to our Twitter feed at Rich Eisen Show.
Didn't you repost it?
I reposted a 5-minute clip of him.
We just heard him say,
you know, I said, what do you say to people who said that you needed 7 seconds after the four to get up? Mm-hmm. And he's basically like, well, you know, I don't pay it any mind, but, you know, what do they say about somebody who won 10 of 12 rounds that night and got a draw? You know, somebody who's battled mental health and picked myself up off the mat, basically in real life. And then my follow-up question was like, what is that? Like, what was that struggle with mental health? And then was a 5-minute answer that he gave in a back and forth that I had that we put up there. And it's, I think, the most viewed video we've ever had on Twitter in the history of our show. And it's Mental Health Awareness Day, so I'll just call everybody's attention to that. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Normally, Chris, we do Overreaction Monday in the middle of this show.
Yes.
But middle of this segment. But here's what I'd like to reverse it.
We'll go first.
Well, what I'd like to do is take a call and then hit what's going on in Jacksonville, and then we'll get to Overreaction Monday in the final segment of this hour.
Sounds great.
So let me take this phone call here. Justin in Cleveland, you're here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Justin?
Rich, what's going on, man? It's a pleasure to talk to you. I just want to say I love you. You're always pro-Cleveland, and not many people are. But my question for you is, is it indicative of the Browns' faith in Baker Mayfield as a quarterback
with the play calling that came through that last two, the last two drives. You know, I love Baker, but why did it take us 50 seconds to move 12 yards downfield? And then secondly, I know you can't let the game be in the hands of the Zebras, but Sky Judge would have been great for that moment. So,
well, I mean, I don't think you're going to get Sky Judge help on a pass interference call. I don't think. You're going to get Sky Judge help. How many times you see this weekend after we had Pereira on and he basically said you don't know the number of times that they get in somebody's ear to say that there's a catch, not a catch?
It seems like it happened a few, though.
Perfect example. Did you see Rondale Moore on the sideline for Arizona versus San Francisco?
Early,
on a deep
right?
ball, a deep ball in that game, and it was ruled incomplete, and he dragged his feet, and they took a long time getting that next snap going. I think that they got in their ear and said that that's a catch.
I think so, too.
And they changed the ruling on the field, and there was no review, and off we go.
It was like great. I'm saying, it works,
so I don't know about that.
Kind of seamlessly.
Let me just say this, man. Let me just say this. So you're without Jarvis Landry, right? And you tell me, Jarvis Landry's out. Odell is still, we're still waiting to see what's going on with him, right? And he's basically, you know what, he had two catches for 20 yards yesterday in this game where it was on tilt, okay? Let me just ask you something. If you're without your top two wideouts in the NFL, you're toast, right, in the NFL. And then the quarterback who throws for 300 yards when the other guy almost throws for 400 yards and keeps you in the game, and you're going back and forth one after the other. We're talking about how great that quarterback is, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, he threw for 300 yards. Top two receivers are out. How come Baker just gets crap? What is it? I don't get it.
I don't get it.
And so I'll ask you. You're there in Cleveland, Justin. Like, what, you want Charlie Fry back? You know what I mean? Like, honestly, well, do you want the old days back? Because this is a hell of a lot better than anything remotely close to what you had prior to Baker Mayfield. I mean, like, what do you want? You know, I mean, you just make a defensive stop every now and then. And you know, that this is one of those games where if the defense actually was able to hold Justin Herbert down and not let Mike Williams behind them and all of that business, then you win this game, right? And you should have beaten the Chiefs. I don't know, man. I don't place it all on Baker's shoulders. The way everyone else does.
It's definitely all I see on social media. It's always it's always against Baker, and it's just you start letting it get to you as a fan. Like, is it Baker's fault?
I don't know.
Need something?
All I know is I take Baker on the Jets. I take him. Thanks for the call. I take him. I know what he is. Okay, I know what he is. And what he is a winning quarterback in the NFL. Yeah. He has yet to just do what I guess Herbert did, right?
Well, he's not asked to win games. There's a huge difference.
Well, yesterday they needed to get into position for a touchdown, right? I mean, and just...
But they were still running the football primarily. Like if you look at the big plays, you look at the number and see, oh, he had a 70-yard pass. Well, he had a 12-yard pass, and Njoku did the rest. So he's not asked to, like, go out and take over games and kind of dominate.
Yeah, but you know how many times a quarterback does that? We'll throw a 10-yard pass, the receiver breaks eight tackles, run 60.
Yeah, but everybody gets
he ran seven. Like, he threw a 7-yard bomb.
Hey, that's not how that happens. Let me just say this.
It's not like Josh Allen, though, throwing bombs.
Well, that's
– you know what I mean?
Let me just say this. Baker gets a raw deal, man. He doesn't have Jarvis Landry. He doesn't have Odell Beckham. Any other quarterback in the league, Justin Herbert, if Herbert didn't have Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, okay, right? If Brady didn't have Evans and Godwin.
Well, Brady did it forever with no wide receivers in New England.
I understand.
Yeah, but Tom Brady's an anomaly.
If Brady didn't have, or I'm just using these examples. If Mahomes didn't have Hill and Kelsey, if Allen didn't have Diggs and Emmanuel Sanders, or Diggs and Knox, who's really coming on with a strong. If Murray didn't have Green and DeAndre, I can go on and on and on. And they won a football game, or they were in an immoral victory game, we'd be talking about, boy, what a great game for that guy. Baker threw for 300 yards, and Odell's a shadow of his former self, and Jarvis Landry's out. It's Donovan Peoples-Jones, Rashard Higgins, and David Njoku. Come on now. Like, honestly, you got the run game. Play defense. Play some defense. If they played some defense.
Yeah, they should have. I mean.
Right? The only game where the defense has totally shown up was when they destroyed Justin Fields. Tighten it up on the other side of the ball and let Baker in the run game win games for you. How does that sound?
That's the thing, Rich. With those running backs.
What's going on?
He doesn't really have to.
So what I'm just saying is, like, that's the formula for success. They haven't played any games in division yet. Everybody just take a beat. But Baker gets crap, man.
You know why it is? It's the commercials.
I don't. So what? They're actually very good.
They're great, but you know
what? He's hilarious.
But you guys know the commercials. You know what I don't miss? I don't miss Aaron Rodgers' agent from all those years. I don't miss that guy with his Bluetooth in his ear. I don't miss that.
You guys know
Aaron Rodgers, who's great at what he does, made some terrible commercials with that agent.
But that's how people are. When athletes get commercials, the first thing they say is, if they don't do well, it's like, oh, well, you're doing these commercials.
But he does well. He won a playoff game last year. He went to Kansas City last year.
We're talking to rational people. These are the things that they say. They get on athletes when they do these commercials and they don't win every week. Like, that's just how people are.
I'm just saying, put the commercials aside. Okay, if there's any Browns fans that are sitting here this morning and saying Baker stinks, what do you want? What do you want? You want Case Keenum in there and see how that works? I'll tell you how it's going to work. Ask Minnesota Vikings fans how that works.
I liked your Charlie Fry reference.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Just ask Joe Thomas. Tell us any of the 90 million quarterbacks that you tried your best to protect, Joe, and ask any. It's so much better. The position stabilized. And guess what? They're going to re-sign him. He's going to get re-signed. He might not make Allen money, but he's going to get re-signed. I don't get it. I don't get it. It's just because so many people in our business love making hay and bones on this kid's backwards cap stuff and not shaking, you know, Hugh Jackson's hand. What do you want him to shake his hand after he gave Tyrod Taylor the gig and Tyrod Taylor had to get hurt before he got in there? And he's young. Give him a break. They're 3-2. Don't forget your own 5. I'm sitting here 1-4. I got my kid flying back from London. Another half of football in the first half where it was hot garbage. I'm waiting for it. Taking my lumps again. I'd love to be where you are, Cleveland fans. I didn't even expect to go off on that.
I mean,
so now we got to reconfigure our rundown. I want to get to Overreaction Monday. That's why we're going to have to do that in hour number 3, Chris, because I want to make sure there's enough real estate.
Dang. Okay.
Yeah, man.
I mean, I got some good ones.
I know you do. So we'll do it later on. We got Austin Eckler coming up. I got phone calls, and I want to definitely get to the Urban Meyer stuff. That's coming up next. You can't move. All right, you can move. Don't move. I'm in a mood now.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Right here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH. Number to dial. We'll take your calls in a second. Austin Eckler, top of the hour. So last week, we had a conversation here about how big the Jacksonville Jaguar game was going to be this week, because if the play on the field was so brutal and a total vote of no confidence, like their play on the field would be something that's, okay, the coach has totally lost this locker room. He's totally lost it. And you even asked that, then I would think that they'd have no choice but to bounce Urban Meyer. Now, there's a bye week coming up after this upcoming game in London. This is another huge crossroads, because they're not going to just fire him off of yesterday's game where it was the typical Derrick Henry blowing them out. They're not going to fire him before they go over to London and then have a bye week. Going to keep this all in place and hope that Trent Grimm from the Independent, or all of them, Trent Grimm or whatever, from the Independent, isn't going to ask all these questions that gets everybody off kilter. And as you know, because of COVID, these teams only go, I think, right before the game or Friday or something.
Yeah,
like
the Falcons, they used to, I think, went on Thursday.
Remember those days they used to go like the whole week? Like literally they'd already be there. Spend the whole week there and get used to it. Not anymore. You asked me, what about a moral victory? Would that be enough? And I said, yeah, it would be enough. And yesterday was tight until it wasn't.
But Trevor Lawrence played well.
Here's the issue now. When the coach says something and the quarterback says something else. This was Urban Meyer after the loss to fall to 0-5. And he just looks, he looks haggard is the only way to put it.
At this point.
Pretty desperate. Desperate for a win. Desperate the way they go to work each day, each week. Desperate for a win. And, you know, we can't worry about the past, worry about the future, and trip to London and try to get a win. Guys, you know, some guys are playing their tails off. And, but yeah, we're desperate for a win.
So, the same question of how, you know, are you desperate? Because Urban spoke first and then Trevor Lawrence spoke second. So the same question was then asked of the quarterback.
How desperate do you feel this locker room is? Is it something y'all think about, talk about, or no?
As far as like the streak or anything like that? No, I mean, no, we don't really talk about that. It's not something we, you know, I don't think that's good to talk about that. And you can't get desperate, you know. You gotta just keep going to work, and we're gonna win some games. We're gonna turn it around. And you know, we all thought today was the day we're going to get that first win, and it wasn't. You know, we didn't execute enough down the stretch, but we're going to figure it out, and we're going to turn this thing around. It's going to be a lot of fun when we do.
Oh, boy. Coach says we're desperate. Quarterbacks is not. Now, again, the streak is 20. Uh-oh. The streak is 20 losses in a row from last year. Again, the last time they won was week one of last year. At least the Jets snuck their wins, plural, in at the end of last year. So it's not a losing streak that dates all the way back. And Trevor Lawrence was in college, and some of these kids were in college. So, of course, he's going to have a different point of view, and Urban didn't lose the first 15 games of that streak either, but these five are on him, and the last two are surrounding the video that came out from last weekend. So maybe that's why one guy is more desperate sounding than the other. Because one who says we're not desperate, we're going to be fine, we're going to turn around and it's going to be great when we do, knows he's not going anywhere. He knows he's going nowhere. And he set up shop and he's just going to develop. And that's the whole point of having a new coach with that guy, because that new coach with a long contract is supposed to feel the same lack of pressure to win right now. Same lack of pressure should be coming.
Nope.
Because you're attached to the hip, you're in a honeymoon, and management knows the losses are going to come. Everybody knows. You draft first overall, rookie quarterback, you've never done it in the league. We're all cool because you're Urban Meyer, and that's Trevor Lawrence. That's the plan that we have. We're all good. One guy's now desperate. That's a problem. Certainly if he feels desperate and the quarterback's trying to put his pretty cool for school attitude out there. All right. What about Carlos Hyde, by the way? Who it seems like they can't quit. Out there on the field, James Robinson once again having a remarkable game. They go for it on fourth down in a game where, you know, makes sense. Go for it and you could be back in this thing. Go for it on fourth down and they run it with Carlos Hyde. They don't sneak it with their quarterback right on the goal line. Why? Was the question asked of Urban Meyer.
And the quarterback sneak, he's not quite comfortable with it yet. We've been practicing that. I know that might sound silly, but when you've never done it, it's something that we need to continue to make that so you can make that call in that critical situation.
All right. So there was that. Again, Trevor Lawrence came in next. Trevor was asked, are you uncomfortable doing the quarterback sneak?
Do you feel comfortable being under center in that situation for a quarterback sneak, or is that something you guys are still working on?
No, I feel comfortable. I obviously I haven't really ran it before in a game, but no, I feel comfortable. It's something we've worked. So, you know, but we trust our guys up front. We trust our backs in that situation. Obviously, love to get in there, but if we make the play, you know, like it's like no one says anything, but it's a TFL, and that doesn't look great, obviously. So we all can get better, but no, QB sneak is always something that we can get to and I feel comfortable with.
TFL stands for tackle for loss, not too effing late, which, you know, apparently Trevor Lawrence's press conference was for the Jaguars to appear to be on the same page after yesterday's loss. Let me just say this, Chris. You haven't gotten to the point yet that Susie and I are at with parenting, you and Sarah. At some point, Cage will be KG enough to talk and play you and Sarah off one another. That's going to happen. Sarah tells Cage one thing. You then get Cage coming to you and saying, I want to do this thing. And you're like, sure, go ahead. Not knowing that Sarah's already told Cage no. That's what this appears to be to me. Because Susie and I get together, so we have a united front with our children. We get together. Like, literally, things happen, and we update each other on what the kids have done, so we're fully knowledgeable when we're in the arena with the children to be on the same page. How do you not get on the same page? Well, the game's just ended. The game's just ended. Totally get it. But if you're on the same page the other 6.5 days of the week, you're going to wind up saying the same thing. The greatest thing that one of our children say to us in these situations is, Mom just said the same thing, or Dad just said the same thing. It's like, yes, that's functional. Dysfunctional is, yeah, we're desperate, says the guy with a long-term contract. And kid who just showed up, yeah, we're going to be good. We're not desperate.
Yeah, it's all good.
Desperate's not what we're talking about
we're
in this locker room.
We're going to get wins. We know we're going to get them at some
point. And then coach is like, yeah, kid's not comfortable under center. Makes sense. Guy's not under the center in college. He's always in the shotgun. 5 weeks in and training camp in. Well, maybe those snaps went to Gardner Minshew, huh? Again, that's the stuff that happens here. And I don't mean to kick anybody when they're down. But the result might have been close enough, and the bye week too far away for anything to be done right now. Well, it doesn't sound great that the guy with a long-term contract is using the word desperate, and the kid who's just lets it all go off his back is like, yeah, we'll be fine. Because that means things aren't really fine. Austin Eckler joining us next on The Rich Eisen Show.